Villon-sur-Salt, France, spring 1707. 5. Blink and the years fall away like leaves. Adeline is 16 now, and everyone speaks of her as if she is a summer bloom, something to be plucked and propped within a vase, intended only to flower and then to rot. Like Isabel, who dreams of family instead of freedom, and seems content to briefly blossom and then wither. No. Adeline has decided she would rather be a tree, like Estelle. If she must grow roots, she would rather be left to flourish wild instead of pruned, would rather stand alone, allowed to grow beneath the open sky. Better that than firewood, cut down just to burn in someone else's hearth. She hefts the laundry on her hip and crests the rise, making her way down the weedy slope to the river. When she reaches the banks, she turns the basket out, dumping the soiled clothes into the grass, and there, tucked like a secret between the skirts and aprons and undergarments, is the sketchbook. Not the first. She has gathered them year after year, careful to fill every inch of space to make the most of each blank page. But every one is like a taper burning on a moonless night, always running out too fast. It does not help that she keeps giving bits away. She kicks off her shoes and slumps back against the slope, her skirts pooling beneath her. She runs her fingers through the weedy grass and finds the fraying edge of the paper, one of her favorite drawings, folded into a square and driven down into the bank last week, just after dawn. A token, buried like a seed, or a promise, an offering. Adeline still prays to the new god, when she must, but when her parents are not looking, she prays to the old ones, too. She can do both, keep one tucked in her cheek like a cherry pit, while she whispers to the other. So far, none of them have answered. And yet, Adeline is sure that they are listening. When Georges Caron began to look at her a certain way last spring, she prayed for him to turn his gaze, and he began to notice Isabel instead. Isabel has since become his wife and is now ripe with her first child and worn with all the torments that come with it. When Arnaud Toul made his intentions clear last fall, Adeline prayed that he would find another girl. He did not, but that winter he took ill and died, and Adeline felt terrible for her relief, even as she fed more trinkets to the stream. She has prayed, and someone must have heard, for she is still free. Free from courtship, free from marriage, free from everything except Villon, left alone to grow and dream. Adeline sits back on the slope, the sketch pad balanced on her knees. She pulls the drawstring pouch from her pocket, bits of charcoal and a few worn-down precious pencils rattling like coins on market day. She used to bind a bit of cloth around the stems to keep her fingers clean, until her father fashioned narrow bands of wood around the blackened sticks and showed her how to hold the little knife, how to shave away the edges and trim the casing into points. And now the images are sharper, the edges contoured, the details fine. The pictures bloom like stains across the paper, landscapes of Villon and everyone in it, too. The lines of her mother's hair and her father's eyes and Estelle's hands, and then there, tucked into the seams and edges of each page, Adeline's secret, her stranger. Every bit of unused space she fills with him, a face drawn so often that the gestures now feel effortless, the lines unfurling on their own. She can conjure him from memory, even though they have never met. He is, after all, only a figment of her mind, a companion crafted first from boredom and then from longing, a dream to keep her company. She doesn't remember when it started, only that one day she cast her gaze about the village and found every prospect wanting. Arnaud's eyes were pleasant, but he had no chin. Jacques was tall, but dull as dirt. Georges was strong, but his hands were rough, his moods rougher still. And so she stole the pieces she found pleasant and assembled someone new, a stranger. It began as a game, but the more Adeline draws him, the stronger the lines, the more confident the press of her charcoal. black curls, pale eyes, strong jaw, sloping shoulders, and a Cupid's bow mouth. A man she'd never meet, a life she'd never know, a world she could only dream of. When she is restless, she returns to the drawings, tracing over the now familiar lines. And when she cannot sleep, she thinks of him. Not the angle of his cheek or the shade of green she has conjured for his eyes, but his voice, his touch. She lies awake and imagines him beside her, his long fingers tracing absent patterns on her skin. As he does, he tells her stories. Not the kind her father used to tell, of knights and kingdoms, princesses and thieves, not fairy tales and warnings of venturing outside the lines, but stories that feel like truths, renditions of the road, cities that sparkle, of the world beyond Vion. And even though the words she puts in his mouth are surely full of errors and lies, her stranger's conjured voice makes them sound so wonderful, so real. "If only you could see it," he says. "I would give anything," she answers. "One day," he promises, "one day I'll show you. You'll see it all." The words ache, even as she thinks them, the game giving way to want, a thing too genuine, too dangerous. And so, even in her imagination, she guides the conversation back to safer roads. "Tell me about tigers," Adelin says, having heard of the massive cats from Estelle, who heard of them from the mason, who was part of a caravan that included a woman who claimed to have seen one. Her stranger smiles and gestures with his tapered fingers and tells her of their silken fur, their teeth, their furious roars. On the slope, the laundry forgotten beside her, Adelin turns her wooden ring absently with one hand as she draws with the other, sketching out his eyes, his mouth, the line of his bare shoulders. She breathes life into him with every line, and with every stroke, coaxes out another story. "Tell me about dancing in Paris. Tell me about sailing across the sea. Tell me everything." There was no danger in it, no reproach, not when she was young. All girls are prone to dreaming. She will grow out of it, her parents say. But instead, Adelin feels herself growing in, holding tighter to the stubborn hope of something more. The world should be getting larger. Instead, she feels it shrinking, tightening like chains around her limbs as the flat lines of her own body begin to curve out against it, and suddenly the charcoal beneath her nails is unbecoming, as is the idea that she would choose her own company over Arnaud's or Georges or any man who might have her. She is at odds with everything. She does not fit. An insult to her sex, a stubborn child in a woman's form, her head bowed and arms wrapped tight around her drawing pad as if it were a door. And when she looks up, her gaze always goes to the edge of town. "A dreamer," scorns her mother. "A dreamer," mourns her father. "A dreamer," warns Estelle. Still, it does not seem such a bad word. Until Adelin wakes up.